From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. President Harry Truman signed the Women's Armed Services Integration Act of 1948. That law opened the military services up to women as permanent, regular members, but with strict conditions. If a woman got pregnant, she had to be discharged. Each service had to limit the number of women to 2% of their overall force, and women were not allowed to serve in combat or command men. Now the military says some 280,000 women have been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan since 2001. Women currently make up about 15% of the overall force and about 17% of the officers. The military says more than 150 women have been killed and more than 800 wounded in the Iraq and Afghan wars. Today, we'll meet two women who made the military their lives. Plus, the state attorney's office and state representative Kathleen Pasadomo of Naples formed a new elder fraud task force to crack down on financial abuse and exploitation of Florida seniors. First, this news.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Officials with the state attorney's office, along with state representative Kathleen Pasadomo of Naples, recently announced the creation of a new elder task force. Financial abuse and exploitation of the elderly is a growing problem in the region, and this new task force is designed to connect law enforcement and other governmental agencies in their efforts to identify, investigate, and prevent such crimes. Joining me now for a closer look at the growing prevalence of these crimes and how this new task force will operate is Assistant State Attorney James Miller with Florida's 20th Judicial Circuit. He also heads the office's Economic Crime Unit and will head the Elder Fraud Task Force. James Miller, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us in studio is Republican State Representative Kathleen Pasadomo of Naples. She represents Florida's State House District 106, which includes a large swath of western Collier County, from North Naples south through the western edge of the Everglades. She heads the House Civil Justice Subcommittee and has led several legislative efforts in the state capitol to address these kinds of crimes. Representative Pasadomo, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I invite listeners to join our conversation as well. Connect with our guests with your comments and questions. Or if you or an elder loved one has been a victim of fraud or financial exploitation, give us a call and tell your story. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Follow the live Twitter chat using hashtag GulfCoastLive or post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And James Miller, before we get into the details of how the new Elder Fraud Task Force for the 20th Judicial Circuit will function, tell us what we mean when we talk about this term elder fraud and financial exploitation. Can you maybe give us some examples of such crimes that your office has been involved with?
Well, first of all, it's a financial crime against somebody who's over 60 and meets certain parameters. Some certain examples involve a lot of times we have cases that have caretaker theft. People will move down here to Florida with a loved one, and perhaps that loved one passes away and they don't have any other family here. So somebody else kind of comes on in and oftentimes takes advantage of that person.
And are there specific examples you can give us in regards to, you know, how these crimes occur or who the perpetrators are? Because I know sometimes it is family members, but you're saying sometimes it's also like a home aid or
a lot of times it's home health aides and other people who become caretakers, perhaps neighbors, people in the community. That's a large number of the perpetrators of these crimes.
Okay. And Representative Pasadomo, thanks. We're just getting you comfortable in studio here. Thanks so much for rushing to get here. You know, in terms of legislative efforts, you've really been leading the charge to crack down on these sorts of crimes. What first put these issues on your radar? Is this something that you heard about from concerned Southwest Florida residents?
Exactly that. I had gotten a call when I was first elected in 2010 from a local trust and estates lawyer who had an elderly client whose caregiver had basically taken over all her finances and robbed her blind. And this was a woman that was fairly wealthy and ended up being in public housing because everything had been stolen. And unfortunately, the perpetrator had, you know, it started with, you know, taking her shopping, taking her to the grocery store. And then it was, well, you know, used to hear, I'll go to the store, let me have your credit card. Next thing you know, the credit card was in the perpetrator's name. The jewelry was gone. The silver was gone. The woman was became a virtual prisoner in her own home. And by the time the family found out about it, she was destitute and the perpetrator had left.
Wow, wow. And do you think there's maybe a psychological element to these crimes as well? Do the people often maybe isolate their victims?
Absolutely. There's a lot of isolation and a violation of trust that occurs.
And Representative Pasadomo, at last week's press conference announcing this new task force, you stated that elder exploitation and financial abuse is the crime of the 21st century and that we are at ground zero here in Southwest Florida. Is this really a growing problem nationally as well, or are we disproportionately being affected by a larger problem here?
Well, it actually is a national problem and is getting worse and worse. The AARP has been doing a study on this on a national level. And, you know, obviously our population, as it ages, we become more targets. And the thieves and the scammers with the ability to contact people via the internet or on the phone. And there are people from all over the world that are exploiting our citizens. And there is nothing that we can do about it when they're in other countries. So it's become a significant problem. Even in Southwest Florida, if we have an older person that's exploited and it's somebody from Miami, there's a question of who has jurisdiction. Is it the Miami law enforcement or is it here? So it's a very difficult issue.
Interesting. James Miller, you know, we were talking about the perpetrators and, you know, you had mentioned the fact that some of these folks who do become victims, they don't have family down here looking out for them. But are there cases where the perpetrators themselves are members of the family? And does that make it more difficult to prosecute?
Oftentimes you'll find that happens. You'll have a wills trust contest after someone passes away and you'll find some misappropriations. And so it does make it more difficult to prosecute it. Obviously, that adds an element of some conflict in between the families.
All right. And looking just beyond the elder population as well, are there other demographic groups that are especially vulnerable to this type of crime?
Well, actually, this statute applies to the elderly and the disabled. So there are some crimes people are taken advantage of who are disabled as well.
Okay. And even if someone, you know, doesn't have older parents or grandparents or another vulnerable loved one that they might be worried about, do we all have a stake in cracking down on these types of crimes?
Absolutely, especially here in Southwest Florida. I mean, you're talking about Charlotte County is considered the oldest county in the state by numbers. Lee County, we have the sixth most number of people over 60. And in Collier County, one out of every four people is over 65. So we have a significant stake here in our community.
Go ahead. You wanted to say something?
Yeah. I mean, some of the statistics that were compelling to me is that it's been estimated that nationwide about almost $3 billion has been exploited from our older population. And so when you ask about why is it important, that is a tremendous amount of money. And a lot of those people then end up becoming, as wards of the state. And, you know, these cases are underreported as well. And one of my biggest concerns is that a lot of our older population in particular, and this is how it was explained to me by the attorney that brought this to me. He said, you know, the most tragic part of this whole thing is that these people love the person that abuses them because they're like a little puppy dog. They love who feeds them.
Right, right. Again, there's that psychological element to it as well. Well, we're exploring the growing problem of fraud and financial exploitation of the elderly and other vulnerable populations upon the creation of a new multi-agency task force designed to better address such crimes. We're speaking with State House Representative Kathleen Pasadomo and Assistant State Attorney James Miller of Florida's 20th Judicial Circuit. You can connect with our guests by calling 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media or follow the live Twitter chat using hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And James Miller, how many of these cases does the state attorney's office here, you know, typically see?
At any given time, we're looking at between 2 and 5 in the 5 counties that we prosecute. So, and that number can fluctuate some depending upon the time of year and also how often it's reported, as Ms. Pasadomo said.
And has that number in recent years been on the rise, do you think?
I think so, as we have the increase in the number of people just with the baby boomer generation. I would believe so.
And you know, what about elder residents in more rural parts of Southwest Florida, you know, like Hendry or Glades County? If they're being exploited by a home health worker or a family member, you know, as we discussed, that perpetrator might be one of the only people that victim has regular contact with. Is there a concern that, you know, the number of cases in more rural areas like that might be higher or higher than we even know?
I believe that's true. And I think if you look at the national statistics, that is what they state, is that basically people who are elderly that live in rural areas are more likely to suffer some sort of financial exploitation.
And Representative Pasadomo, why do seniors seem so often to be reluctant to self-report?
Well, the main reason is because, you know, these are people who have been independent, and they jealously and fiercely guard that independence. And so, first of all, it's hard to admit that you were snookered by someone, particularly someone that you relied on. So that's the first thing. It's a little bit of pride. But secondly, and again, most importantly, is they don't want to lose their independence. And they feel the first thing that's going to happen is if they acknowledge that they were taken advantage of, that they're going to be put into a nursing home, taken out of their house, and lose all measure of independence. And to me, as I get older and we all get older, independence is the most important thing we have.
Right. And I want to touch again on this issue of independence and guardianship statutes in Florida in just a few minutes here. But first, let's talk a little bit about how this task force will function itself. What are some of the different agencies that are going to be involved?
Well, right now it's about 12 law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida, including some state agencies with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the Division of Insurance Fraud, and the Office of Financial Regulation. More locally, we have the Lee County Sheriffs, the Charlotte County Sheriffs, the Collier County Sheriff, and the Naples Police, the Cape Coral Police, and the Punta Gorda Police. And I'm sure there's a few I'm missing. And one of the key functions of this task force is really to educate them on the change in the law that was passed by Representative Pasadomo in October of 2014, because it gives us some significant ways, tools for investigation, and it gives the prosecutor a lot of different tools in his toolbox.
All right. And I think what he's referring to is the law that you championed through along with Senator Jeff Brandis in the 2014 session.
I worked with Senator Richter, but the one thing that I think is very important to recognize is that before that, the exploitation statute only applied if it was by threats or intimidation. And that the reason there weren't that many cases is that oftentimes, tragically, our older citizens voluntarily gave these funds. They weren't threatened or intimidated. In fact, as I said earlier, they loved the people that took advantage of them. So just by deleting threats and intimidation opens it up for those people that coerce lovingly. And secondly, what we also put in the bill, which is pretty much groundbreaking and nowhere else in the country, there's a presumption that if an older person gives a gift of $10,000 or more to a non-family member who they've known less than 2 years, it is presumed to be exploitation.
Okay. And have you noticed, are any other states looking to follow suit at this point, or have you looked into that at all yet?
I haven't looked into it, but I hope they are, because I think that would go a long way. And in fact, I had a number of my colleagues who said, $10,000, that's too high. We should make a lower amount. But there were also – and something that I think we need to have a dialogue on that we did not address, and that is – These bills are generally geared towards non-family members because the dialogue and the question you have is, do we want to interfere in family relations as a state? And at this point, the determination is no, we don't. That may come in the future, but, you know, it's unfortunate when you have an individual who selects a family member to either, you know, manage their affairs. Do we intervene as a state if that person doesn't do a good job?
Well, and you know, going back to the non-family members, I was surprised, and I think a lot of other folks might be too, to learn that there are folks out there who you know, work and act as professional guardians who will actually go trolling nursing homes looking for people who are really ripe for victimization.
That's a real problem in the state. We're very fortunate in Southwest Florida in general that our guardian pool are very competent, qualified, excellent people who really do a lot for their wards. But throughout the state and some of the larger metropolitan areas, it has become a practice where professional guardians will go to nursing homes. They will find people that are feeble, beginning to have dementia. They will file petitions for the appointment of an emergency guardian and get appointed. Mm-hmm. And then we're off to the races.
All right. And Jeff, or excuse me, James Miller, how did these, you know, the law that Kathleen Pasadomo here helped change, what do law enforcement agencies need to know about that in terms of how it can make it more easy for them to identify and prosecute these
cases?
Well,
the issue is that deletion of intimidation and deception is especially important.
Okay.
Because we can look at cases differently, because a lot of times these individuals may not know that they are being victimized, and so that's essentially very helpful.
And Kathleen Pasadomo, let's again look at some of the legislation that you've helped champion through the legislature, specifically as it relates to emergency temporary guardianship declarations. How did those come to pass, and how were you looking to change that?
Well, the other, you know, as we were focusing on some of our elder issues, which is really my passion in the legislature, it came to our attention that throughout the state there was a problem with the process, the guardianship process, how guardians were appointed, and it started with a bill that we passed not this past session, but the session before. Very simple, giving the clerks of the court the ability to audit in detail guardianship accounts. And that's an important thing, because what was happening was guardians were basically overcharging tremendous amounts to these estates of the wards. And no one was really reviewing them. They would file totals. And this is an example that a judge brought to my attention. She happened to be looking at the report. And it had a $500, I think, or something like that, a monthly charge for lawn mowing or lawn maintenance in a condominium with no lawn.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she happened to just know the project. So, but unless somebody actually audits those accounts, you don't know whether that's proper or not. So we gave the clerks the ability to do that. And then that one thing led to another. And then this year we did a complete overhaul of the appointment process. And one thing that was amazing to me, the guardians that I know down here, this is what they do all the time. They care. They're professional. They understand their duties. But in the statute, there was nothing that said what a guardian's duties are to the ward. Mm. I mean, amazing. You'd think it was a matter of common sense. And so we put duties in there, and we made a provision. A breach of that duty has criminal penalties, mm-hmm. which was not the case before. The good guardians have nothing to worry about because they do a great job. But the ones that have exploited or misused the accounts of their wards now could face criminal penalties, when before all they'd have is a fine, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did discuss, you know, the folks living in like more rural areas where they are a little more isolated being at risk. But you know, looking at your constituency in particular, do you think there's a big risk there? Just because you do have a lot of elder folks living in the Naples area, and there's a good amount of wealth there. I think that would be, you know, where somebody might go to look for victims.
Well, that's absolutely true. And what's even more interesting is there's no way of knowing how much money in the state of Florida is under guardianships mm-hmm. because they don't track it. I do know Palm Beach County is very particular. They have an appointed person in the clerk's office that just deals with guardianships. And he told me they had 9 or $10 billion in under guardianship. And that's just in one county. So it's a huge amount of money that could potentially be exploited.
And James Miller, with the state attorney's office, do you find that the perpetrators of this are, I guess, what you might describe as career criminals? Or are they folks who did this and then suddenly they're in control of these large sums of money and they kind of have a breach of moral fortitude?
Realistically, it comes from all walks of life. You will never be surprised as to who could fall as a defendant under the statute. It could be someone who is a career criminal who's committed multiple acts of theft, or it could be someone who's a licensed attorney who's lived a generally lawful life. You'd be very surprised as to who could be a defendant under these circumstances.
All right. And I'm thinking about these type of crimes kind of in the same vein as something like human trafficking, in the sense that it happens right under our noses and a lot of times we don't even know it's happening. Is there a public education component to this newly created task force as well?
There is, but some of that is involving the law enforcement to further educate the community. That's really where the public education goes.
And are there signs or symptoms that somebody could look for if they, might have thought that someone that they know, like a neighbor or a loved one, might be being financially exploited? I guess it's kind of complicated there. It would be something more you really have to look at on a case-by-case basis.
Well, a lot of what I heard sort of anecdotally was in some of the nursing homes where staff will notice sort of as some of their clientele ages, and then they have the guardians and the expenses don't look right, or the isolation of our older person. I think what happens particularly of the individuals who live alone is they become isolated. Kids aren't allowed to come and visit. That happens frequently. I hear that from where guardians will say, oh, you're not allowed to visit your mother or your father because you're too disruptive. Now, is that true or not? But with that isolation comes the total dependence on the guardian or the caregiver to the exclusion of others.
Mm-hmm. We've actually found that a lot of times some of the reporters are people who work in banks, tellers, will often notice somebody coming in with someone new and somebody perhaps taking all of their money out of their bank accounts and putting it into a new bank account mm-hmm. for no reason after they've been going to the same bank for 10, 15 years. And all of a sudden, they met a new person and something happened. We often find that bank tellers are some of our best investigators in this.
And remember the story that was reported locally about the taxi driver who used to drive this woman all the time. And one time she's bringing him to the bank to withdraw $10,000 in cash. Mm-hmm. And he reported it to authorities and I believe saved her from loss.
Right. And, if someone does like a bank teller or whatever the situation is, they notice something unusual about a neighbor. If they have some kind of suspicion that someone they know is being financially exploited, what steps should they take? Who can they call?
Well, the first step is to call local law enforcement and get a case started.
And eventually there will be a hotline created through this task force that people can call as well?
Well, that hotline is mainly so that law enforcement can report those cases to the state attorney's office so that we have a general aspect of what's going on in our community and where we can attach resources to help law enforcement investigate.
And have law enforcement agencies here locally been receptive to the idea of being part of this task force?
Go ahead. I think everyone's been extremely receptive because we recognize what the change in this law does for us in investigating and prosecuting these cases.
All right. Well, any final thoughts to leave us as we come up on the end of the hour?
No, I just really appreciate you taking the time because the more people that hear about these issues, the more they'll understand and they'll start looking for problems in their own family.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both so much for joining us for today's show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
James Miller is Assistant State Attorney for Florida's 20th Judicial Circuit. He also heads the office's Economic Crime Unit and leads the new Elder Fraud Task Force. Republican State Representative Kathleen Pasadomo represents Florida House District 106, encompassing much of Collier County. She chairs the House Civil Justice Subcommittee and is Vice Chair of the House Judiciary Committee. There's more information on the show, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers, Luke Martin and Richard Cinqui. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, Naples, Sarasota, 90.1 FM, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.